I'm Carlos Virgen, and this is The Storyline, produced by The Day in New London, Connecticut.
So, Dave, tell me about Forge Farm. What have you learned as you've written a series of columns reporting on the condition of this historic Stonington property?
Well, you know, Forge Farm, it's an interesting property. It's a beautiful property. It's on, I'd say, one of the prettiest roads in Stonington, a really winding country road, stone walls. There are other historic houses on the road, some farms. It's really beautiful. It came to my attention that there was a problem. I got a call actually from spoke to a neighbor of the property who was concerned that it's been empty for a year. This person is also on the board of the Stonington Historical Society, had also renovated an historic house next door, and was really concerned about the condition and what was happening. And that sort of started me going and unraveling how it got to this point and how it got to be sitting there abandoned.
So it's the property that was being used by Terra Firma Farms most recently.
That's right. And they left at the end of 2016 after a very sort of nasty landlord-tenant fight with the owner of the farm, Connecticut Landmarks. And they were well-known in the community. They were running it as a nonprofit, Terra Firma. They had programs for school children. They brought them onto the farm. They were farming the land, selling the produce, giving it to food kitchens. They really got a big reputation in town and became really much loved by a lot of families nearby.
How about just a little history on Forge Farm itself, how the property ended up being controlled by Connecticut Landmarks?
It was owned for many years. I think they bought it even in the 40s or 50s. It was owned by a couple who didn't have children, Virginia and Charles Berry. Mrs. Berry, kept horses and taught many young women around Stonington and in the general area how to ride horses. So there's sort of a long history of the farm being kind of a beloved community institution and a familiar landmark. So the Berries, I don't know this part of the story, but I'm presuming that they had some conversations with Landmarks. It was then called the Antiquarian Society, and they left it eventually. Mr. Berry died first, and then when Mrs. Berry died in 1982, I believe, it was left, the property and a significant amount of money was left in her will to Landmarks.
And that endowment had pretty specific guidelines of how the money was to be used.
Pretty broad, but it said essentially use this money to preserve and maintain this historic house, preserve it as an example, and the grounds as an example of early American architecture. And essentially, whatever's left after you've done that, you maintained the house and preserved it, you can use the rest of the money for other purposes of the organization. They also very specifically left, there was 50 acres altogether. There was, I think, 17 acres on the opposite side of the road, and the will very specifically gave them permission to sell that 17 acres and to put it into the fund that was supposed to be used first to maintain and preserve the farm.
And so there was initially some investment by Connecticut Landmarks on the property to renovate it to some degree.
Quite significant. And of course, this was then the Antiquarian Society. And it seems clear looking at the record that the management of that society took the bequest very seriously and seemed to do really what was needed. And I think maybe even the Berries might not have known, but the house needed an extensive renovation. It was... and they hired a very, very experienced, respected housewright who knows 18th century houses very well. He spent several years restoring the property. They spent about $400,000, a little more than $400,000. And so when he was done, it was a museum quality restoration.
But it appears since then the maintenance has been lacking. Terra Firma moved in.
That's right. They rented it to just you know, people who lived in it as a house and not farmers, for a number of years. And then in 2004, I believe it was rented to Terra Firma. And then now there's a pretty good record of what happened to the house over that period of time. And that record shows that they did very little to maintain the house. The tenants complained about, really the roof was leaking so badly they had to move buckets around. The windows were broken. The oil, this is really scary, but the oil tank was leaking into the dirt basement. At the end, it turned out that Landmarks had shut down the maintenance contract for the furnace. And so at the very end, by the time they left the house, the furnace shut off constantly, and they'd have to go down and reset it to make it work. So actually, probably the most money they spent was probably the most egregious thing that they did. They repaired the roof, and they put a brand new asphalt roof, totally inappropriate to this museum quality restoration, and all new vinyl windows. And they weren't even measured correctly. They went to Home Depot. Someone went to Home Depot and bought these vinyl windows that were too small, and they put them in, and then they just created this sort of, I don't know, makeshift filler around the window. So it's sort of the people who know preservation in old houses were horrified when they saw this. In fact, I think it ended up in a preservation magazine somewhere, like what not to do.
So Terra Firma left. They had a contentious relationship towards the end because of these maintenance problems.
Yes, and by the time it ended, it was a really sort of nasty situation. They had hired a lawyer, Terra Firma. It broke down to literally what they claim to be even a screaming encounter with the chairman of the board of the Preservation Society.
And at some point, there were negotiations to sell the property?
Yes. Curiously, quite some time before they left, they were concerned, and there's a kind of a long paper trail about this. They were very concerned about not having a longer-term lease. And essentially, they were only given year-to-year renewals. And it was troubling them because they had established these programs. They had invested money in the farm. They got a USDA grant. They built a $100,000 barn. They had volunteer help to build another barn. They got, I think, $60,000 to fence the property. They had cleared it. They had made a significant investment, and they felt that in return, they were also paying rent. They were paying $1,800 a month rent. So they felt that they needed some kind of commitment, that they knew that the future there was safe for them. And then that's when Landmarks began a dialogue, still not resolving the lease, a dialogue about selling the farm to them, transferring it to them. But their opening offer to do that would be that they would keep the endowment, which was then around $1.3 billion, and that Terra Firma would take on the farm and the responsibilities to meet the commitment of the will.
They are still negotiating the possibility of selling the property. And there's a question of whether or not the endowment allows the sale of the property. Is that right?
That's right. Since the farm left and the farmhouse, the Terra Firma left, and the farmhouse has been left empty, Connecticut Landmarks has gone to the Attorney General and opened discussions about the possibility of them selling the property and, yes, keeping the endowment. They seem to be making, and they have made this, and there's a record of this kind of argument that appears periodically through correspondence, official correspondence, but they appear to be making the claim to the Attorney General that the house is not an historic house anymore because it was so thoroughly renovated in the 80s, and therefore they can't really meet the terms of the will and keep it as an architecturally correct example of that period of time. Of course, preservationists scoff at this. It was a beautifully restored house. It's really probably no more rebuilt than many of their other houses, including the Hempstead houses in New London. So it's an argument that they seem to be prepared to make, but tough one.
Any idea when the Attorney General would return a decision?
I don't know that. I only had confirmation last week that they were looking into this, I had no luck asking them what their deadline might be to conclude come up to a decision.
So Connecticut Landmarks owns how many of these historic properties?
You know, it's interesting because they say 11. There are a certain number on their website, but like Forge Farm, there are others apparently they own that are not listed on their website. But I think that their general claim is to have 11.
Why this particular farm? Why has this farm become so problematic and ended up in a condition of such disrepair?
That's a little hard to say at this point. I am looking at other properties that they own and see if there's a pattern here. I do know of one other that seems to be very similar, similarly neglected. I do think the organization certainly is more focused on the houses, if you will, the more glamorous houses that are around the Hartford area. And I think that's where there are a lot. It's a very established organization. They have a lot of influential members and participants, and it's focused very much in the Hartford area. So that could be one reason why they've paid less attention to the house in Stonington.
Well, great. Thanks for stopping by, Dave. And so your next column in this series.
Yes, we'll be looking at another house sort of similar to Forge Farm.
So look for it at theday.com. And again, thanks, Dave.
Great. Thank you.